Welcome to PostView.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the National Healthy Marriage Resource Center conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded July 31st, 2009. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Patrick Patterson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to the July National Health Marriage Resource Center webinar entitled Delivering Relationship Education to Singles, Programming, and Marketing Issues. I want to again welcome you guys back for another month of a powerful hour of impactful information based on the topic that you guys have outlined for us. Many times we've talked about working with couples specifically. There are a number of programs that are working with youth or young adults who are not married, maybe dating or engaged. And so one of the focuses of this webinar is to focus on that specific target population. So we're very excited. They have two presenters that can share practical information about working with couples, but also individuals in that respect. My name is Patrick Patterson. I'm the program manager for the National Health Marriage Resource Center, and delighted to be your facilitator for today's webinar. Our presenters for today are Dr. John Van Epp, developer of the PIC, Premarital Interpersonal Choices and Knowledge, a partner curriculum, and the author of How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk. Our second presenter is Mr. Charles Jackson, Public Relations Coordinator for the Alabama Community Health and Marriage Initiative at Auburn University. Both have been in the field for a number of years and have great information to share with us today about working with individuals in these programs. A few housekeeping notes for those of you that are taking notes before we get started. This webinar is being recorded, so afterwards, shortly thereafter, 7 to 9 days, we'll be posting our webinar materials, the presentations, as well as the frequently asked questions document on the website. Submitting questions. We're delighted to have you guys join us via the webinar technology. Throughout the webinar, as you hear the presentations, you will be able to submit questions using the technology. So for a brief one-on-one on how you submit questions, I'll turn it over to Stephanie Wofford. Stephanie?
I'd like to direct your attention to the demonstration slide that you should be seeing on your screen. You will find the question and answer pane, which is designated by the letters Q&A located at the top of your screen. You can either click on that portion of the menu bar to open the pane, or you can open it and then drag the pane off the menu bar to display it as a standalone box. To ask a question this afternoon, we request that you type your question into the thin box here. I'll highlight for you. And then you click the Ask button. You will automatically receive a reply from us that says, thank you for your question. It has been forwarded to the facilitator. This automatic reply allows us to free up your question and answer pane, which will enable you to ask another question should you so choose. And then Patrick will facilitate questions and answers online. So thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Stephanie. Please look forward to submitting questions. We enjoy the questions, but I think you have a number of those based on today's presentations that we have planned for you guys. Our objectives for today's webinar are twofold. The first objective is to provide webinar attendees with effective strategies for tailoring their program content to meet the relationship education needs of young adults. Again, many of our webinars, much of what we might hear at trainings and conferences is focused on the actual couple. Today we're going to focus specifically on working with the individual in these programs, particularly the relationship education needs of young adults. The second objective, provide practical strategies for how marriage and relationship education programs can effectively market to singles. A number of programs, again, are designed. They do outreach. Their recruitment strategies are for the couple. Now, today we'll focus on how you actually can market the program to singles. So we'll begin. I'll first introduce our first presenter, Dr. John Van Epp. Dr. Van Epp is the developer of the PIC, Premarital Interpersonal Choices and Knowledge, a partner curriculum program. We'll discuss the themes and messages he believes are important for young adults to hear about relationships and preparation for marriage. Dr. Van Epp has conducted numerous seminars and workshops over the past 20 years on topics related to marriage, family, recovery, singlehood, emotional makeup, relationships, and divorce. PIC is being taught in 7 countries and 45 states by hundreds of churches, singles organizations, educational settings and agencies. His book, How to Avoid Falling in Love with a Jerk, is published by McGraw-Hill. Dr. Van Epp holds two MAs in pastoral counseling and psychology and in church history from Ashland Theological Seminary and a PhD in counseling and psychology from the University of Akron. With that, we'll turn it over to Dr. Van Epp.
And I think just as a precursor, I would say, you know, why do we want to present relationship education to singles? I think the starting point would be that when a single person enters into a relationship and starts to become a couple, they don't come in with a blank slate. They already have what I call the templates in their mind. They have certain expectations of what this relationship is going to be like. They have a certain development of their own skills and practices and how they're going to be in a relationship. They have certain filters that they, or lenses, you might say, that they look through at the other person. And all of these different templates end up becoming acted out in the relationship. And a lot of times then start to get challenged and create either difficulties or problems because the templates are leading them in a unhealthy direction. So the key is, you might call it's the upstream idea, that rather than just trying to jump into the troubled waters where couples are struggling, or even the calm waters of trying to teach couples, a big part of what the emphasis on singles is, really singles of all ages, is to say, let's go upstream and teach people how to swim before they even get into the water, while they're on the dry land of not even being in the stream of relationships. I've had a course now for 13 years that we fondly called How to Avoid Falling for a Jerk or a Jerkette, and a lot of what I'm going to be presenting is developed in much more detail in that particular course. There's a number of different versions, and I'll tell you why we have different versions. We have a teen version. We have a college version that's even taught in college campuses and college coursework. We have an adult version for singles that are not only adults but also singles again. And the reason why is because from the earliest ages all the way to those that are 40, 50, 60 years old, back in the stream of trying to choose a partner, in all of these cases there are these templates. And these templates have led them to make decisions about what they're doing in the relationship, how they're building the relationship, what they're looking for in a partner, and just who they are as a partner in the relationship. So I just wanted to give four major constructs, you might say. These are the major points of this curriculum. There's four major concepts that have to be presented in this webinar that really become the backbone of what I've tried to develop in that curriculum. And the first one is, excuse me for a minute, I'm trying to make it move to the second slide and it's not going, so.
We can advance that for you.
Thank you. The first one has to do with character development, and it's very vital that we know how to be, first of all, a healthy partner. So I would say looking in the mirror is the first step of any relationship, and we need to teach, when we teach singles, what it looks like to be a healthy partner, not just what relationships look like, what skills even look like and should be. But we've got to start with who the person is. Unhealthy partners are much more likely to choose unhealthy people to be in a relationship with. And healthy relationships as well also develop unhealthy patterns that infect people and pull them down. We can change all of these things. Life is not stagnant. You know, we're either progressing, regressing, or digressing through life. We're either going forward, backward, or we're getting sidetracked. we all have to deal with whatever particular things might interrupt our relationship, whether we're a young person like a teen coming out of a family and stepping into the early times of of young adulthood, whether we are a 20, 30-something, or whether we have been in lots of relationships and here we are facing a new relationship in our middle life, we've got to step back and look at, hey, what's going on in me and what do I need to do to change and grow? There's another kind of embedded concept about the fact that start with who you are rather than looking at who you are getting in a relationship with. And that's the concept that really healthy dating relationships provide structures for developing maturity and character. In other words, it starts with looking at myself. I know people that have been in a tough relationship and they've had a lot of difficulties and they need to sometimes take a break and not have one relationship overlap with the next, and they've got to stop and work on themselves for a little bit. But the reality is you can do all that work on yourself and really get your act together, which is a good thing. But then when you step into a relationship, the relationship itself begins to bring to the surface different issues, different concerns that you have to address. And if you do a relationship in a healthy way, I have found, and I think that we need to teach this, that healthy relationships are actual structures to help us grow in life and grow as people so that we don't ever really stay the same. We're always, you know, moving. And the relationship structure, when done right, actually becomes a good facilitator for growth. I don't know if I have the control of the slide, so we'll move to the next slide. The second concept that I think is vital to be teaching is the concept of partner selection. It is really vital to know how to choose healthy partners. And we got to teach people how to be choosy, not only how to deal with their own issues and work on themselves, but we have to teach them how to build a healthy relationship with another person that they've selected and know what to look for and how to figure this out. Some people, you know, if we're quite honest with ourselves, are just really difficult to be with in a relationship. And this, you know, is very true for men as well as women. It is not a gender issue. It is really just a people issue, that some people are just tough. And if you start thinking, I know we can't interact here in this webinar, but if we could talk together about have you ever had a relationship with somebody that you just tried your darndest to get along with, you bent over backwards for them, and after a period of time you concluded, you know, this person is just difficult. You know, they have issues that make them unable to be with in a good relationship. If we started listing characteristics, you know, we would come up with things like somebody that is perpetually selfish, or they've got major anger issues, or they're very argumentative or jealous or controlling, or maybe the opposite side, very, very dependent. After we make a whole list and look at all these characteristics and say, you know, that's the reality out there in the world, we'd have to just kind of lower our heads and say, you know, haven't we at one time or another been selfish? Or haven't we had some anger issues? Or haven't we been overly controlling? And if we flip to the next slide, in other words, when it comes to choosing a partner, can we move to the next slide, please? Thanks. You asked the question, what is the difference between acting like a jerk and being a jerk? Well, I think there is a critical difference. And there are some people that, to just be kind of simple about it, there is a fairly singular characteristic that goes through all of these other specific issues that we put on the board, or we make a list and say, avoid this, avoid that. You know, the bottom line is, a person who has a persistent resistance to changing a significant problem area in their life or their relationships, that becomes a person that, you might say, earns the label or the title of being a jerk or jerkette. That becomes the difficult person. Just like we said in point number one, if we're teaching singles you need to be growth-oriented. Life is not stagnant. Life is fluid. We're either moving forward, backward, or we're getting sidetracked. But the reality is that in a relationship, relationships don't just stay stagnant through the course of time. There's all kinds of things that keep changing over the terrain of life. And if you're in a relationship with another person who has a rigid, persistent resistance to addressing some area that bothers you, that just becomes a thorn that many times starts as a pebble in the shoe but becomes crippling to the relationship after you've walked miles together. And so teaching people how to be good identifiers of a person that is able to be conscientious and changing and to know how to work that through is very, very critical. If we can go to the next slide. In terms of the third area to teach, I think we need to teach relationship development. And I'll come toward the end of this presentation and talk a little more in detail about the second one of what actually is the criteria to look for in terms of selecting a partner. Because I think research, which is really quite massive, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of research articles about different categories that would ultimately predict what would be success or predict risk in terms of long-term relationships and marriage. That bulk of research, I think we can categorize, and that's what I did for the How to Avoid Falling for a Jerk program, is categorize that research into user-friendly topics, areas to really explore and get to know. And so we'll come back to that toward the end of the presentation and touch on some of those areas. The third construct, though, that we need to be teaching is the concept of relationship development, that relationships don't run themselves. We really have to be in charge of a relationship, and love is not just some independent force that automatically guides us not only in partner selection, but just develops on its own. Many times you'll ask people of all ages, you know, how will you know when to go further in a relationship? Maybe the further would be to get more serious or engaged, or maybe it has to do with some sexual line that you're going to cross, or maybe it even have to do with marriage. Many times when you ask that kind of question, the answer you will hear is some kind of mystical intuitiveness that I'll just know. You know, I'll know when I know. I'll know when it's right. And the reality of what many people have found is that that is not true, that relationships can develop in a highly accelerated way and ultimately backfire and create all kinds of problems. We need to teach singles that they are in charge of the relationship. We ask this question, why is love blind? Well, many times it's either because of a deficiency of what I call the head knowledge. You'll hear people say, ugh, if only I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have made all those mistakes in the relationship. But other people will say something different, which I would say is they lack a deficiency of, or they have a deficiency of heart knowledge. You might say they have, in many ways, too much heart. They saw the problems, but they were just too invested. They were too in love. They were too caught up with the person. And as a result, this excess of heart knowledge has led them to minimize and overlook things. I think that the solution, if we go up to the next slide, the solution is really to teach singles or to empower them on how to have the head and the heart work together. Can we go to the next slide, please? And then we can go to the one after that. The real plan for having the head and the heart work together is to try to provide a roadmap that says, here's the head knowledge. These are the things that pertain to partner selection. These are the areas that you need to get to know about somebody. You need to engage your thinking processes. It's interesting to me, I've come from my doctorate's in psychology, so I come from a therapy background where a big chunk of what you do is to sit down, whether it's an individual or whether it's a couple or whether it's a family, the starting point is always assessment. What actually is going on here? Make an assessment. You don't learn in your educational program when you're preparing for this profession. You don't learn that assessment is made just by following your intuition. You're given guidelines. We're studying research of what areas of a person's individual makeup or their relationship experience would lead them to this result or that result. And so you put together the picture and you make an assessment of the person by looking at key areas. Well, we teach people to do this in a profession that ultimately is trying to help someone, but you're not, you know, making a decision to move in and live with that person for the next 50 years of your life. And in this area of choosing a partner, it seems just somewhat crazy that we have so much education for professions where assessments are made, but we have little to no education in terms of partner assessments when it comes to dating. And almost as if that's something that, you know, gosh, it's going to interfere with love because I'm going to lose my heart. But really, the heart and the head, the mind, are part of the same overall organism. You know, they're made to work together. We're not supposed to be discontinuous in a way where one stops and the other begins, or incongruent where one is going one direction and the other is going another. But we're made to work in harmony so that if we can teach a practical plan for how to keep your mind engaged while your heart is feeling chemistry and in love and attracted and all the things that the heart tends to generate, if we can keep them working together and teach singles that plan, I think that really will empower singles to make better choices in their relationships and to also, in this area that we're talking about, to build a healthy relationship. If we can go to the next slide, you know, the question of what is love is just overwhelming, to be honest. I mean, you could, where do we go? Do we go to the literature that, you know, for not only hundreds but thousands of years we have literature written about love? Or do we go to the academic world where love is attempted to be defined? Or do we go to even just grammar and word studies, for different languages have many different words that are translated into, at least English, into the word love? So do we look at all of those? You know, love is a very complex experience of life, and yet it is so powerful, and it's at the core of what we're talking about when we talk to singles. We have to have a way to help singles know what love is, and we have to have some kind of a universal approach. If we go to the next slide, I know that in my course, what I tried to do was to create a model, and if you look into the PIC course, you'll see that this model, the relationship attachment model, attempts to portray the bonds of love. Part of what makes love or closeness or a relationship complex is that there is not just one strand of what connects you with another person. The feeling of closeness and a bond with another person actually comes from more than one contributing strand in the relationship. You might say that there are key fibers that connect me with another person when I'm developing that relationship. How well we know each other, how we go about you know, meeting each other's needs, these are some of the strands that are there. And I think it is important to teach, whether you call it sequencing or whether you call it the dynamics of your relationship, to teach the logic of how your trust relates with your commitment. You know, how invested should you be? We have to find language to translate the abstract into very concrete ways. So that's a main reason, at least from my standpoint, that I really felt that a visual model becomes so helpful for singles, because it's very hard to practice something that you can't even visualize. But if you can give them a visualization for what love is and how a relationship is formed and what are the dynamic links that go into that relationship, then if you do that, you really empower them to exercise some intentionality and control over the pacing of their relationship. If we go to the next slide, I really think that many times the partner selection is overrided by the pace of the relationship development. In other words, one of the most common ways people are set up to get involved with a jerk or a jerkette is by having such an accelerated pace of these particular bonds of the relationship that they go way beyond the degree that they really know the person. In other words, they've known the person only a short amount of time, but they feel completely enraptured with them. They do what I call filling in all the gaps in their mind, and so their understanding of the person, their image of the person is much, much more developed, and then they start doing things in the relationship, whether it's how much time they invest or whether it's where they go or whether it's the rate of their sexual involvement. They accelerate all of these things and in just a very short amount of time, not nearly enough time to truly know the person, they have developed a very strong and intense relationship so that the development of the relationship, as I said, overrides the true selection of the partner and the discernment of the mind. The heart, in those cases, override the thinking and the judgment of the head. I'll give you a quick example. If you go, we're going to kind of go through these slides quickly. So if, in the next slide, I don't know if you recognize this person. This is just a little bit of tabloid history, okay? Her name is Shar Jackson, and she was a television actress, or is a television actress, and she got involved a number of years ago with this fella in the next slide, which is, if you don't recognize him, I'll tell you, this is Kevin Federline. And if you go to the next slide, Shar and Kevin got together, and go to the next slide, please, and they had a baby. And a couple years later, when the baby was about two, if you go to the next slide, Shar had a second baby. And just about the time that this second baby was about to be born, somewhere right around the fourth, I think it was about the fourth year of their relationship, she was 9 months pregnant, and she caught wind that Kevin was cheating on her. And he was a backup dancer for this person. In the next slide, if you go to the next one, and he kind of like leaves Shar quickly. If you go to the next slide, please. He leaves Shar quickly and hooks up very, very fast with Britney Spears. And so all of a sudden, the tabloids are all about this new relationship that's going on, Britney and Kevin. And if you go to the next slide, Shar and Kevin now are history. And and you go to the next slide, and next thing you know, Kevin and Brittany are married. It's been 9 months. If we were to chart out their relationship, you would see that certain aspects of this relationship development, like I've mentioned, were way more developed than others. I'll give you a quick example. Brittany didn't know him real well, but she very early on began to talk about marriage, and they started talking about their marriage plans. I think they were married 9 months into this relationship. And her parents wanted her to get a prenuptial agreement, and she was unwilling. And so there was this big feud that went on in the tabloids about whether she'd get a prenup. So even though the relationship was new, even though he cheated on his previous partner who was 9 months pregnant with their second child, even though there were all these warning signals, her trust level, which is very, very bonding, that's one of the intense bonding links, but it's very different than how well you know somebody. But her trust was way, way up there for somebody that there were clear red flags that she was overlooking. And as a result, her intense involvement with him overrided judgment that everybody else was looking at, shaking their head, saying, what are you doing? What's going on here? And I'm not trying to say that this relationship was one-sided, but I am saying that in the early stages of it, you can see where it developed in a very imbalanced way. Next thing you know, they have a child. A couple years later, they have a second child. And around the fourth, fifth year of their marriage, right about the time that the second child was born, Brittany, much like, you know, years ago, Kevin's ex, Char, Brittany catches wind, if you go to the next slide, Brittany catches wind that he was cheating, and the tabloids come out with this, she never really loved Kevin. And I would say, you know, in some ways, there may be some truth to that. And I say, why do we use this example? Well, I use this example, first of all, because everybody knows what happened. At least, if they didn't know about this storyline of Kevin and Char and all of that, you definitely know what happened to Brittany when her marriage broke up. You know, she shaved her head. She ended up going to rehab. She endangered her children. She actually gave up custody of her children at one point. She really had a pretty severe breakdown all the way around. And when you look at all of that, you would say, listen, all of the money in the world and all the fame and success does not protect you or your children from relationship catastrophes. If you go to the next slide, the really sad part of it all is that here we have, go to the next slide, please. Here you have all these children and, you know, these adults as well that are just broken by making poor choices in the development of a relationship, not using the relationship to be a structure to promote character, but just kind of like letting the relationship develop with all of the acceleration and all the intensity without any intentionality, without any sense of pacing. And not using good judgment, you know, not using partner selection, which helps to raise the bar of trustworthiness and character development. And so here are people that have all kinds of wonderful worldly goods and could probably provide the best of living conditions and relationship qualities, and yet are having devastation and brokenness. And if that happens to those that have so much, it is even harder and even worse for those that have less and don't have anything to kind of buffer things with. And so, you know, what is being done there, you know, in the tabloids, unfortunately, if we look around, it's happening at all ages. It's happening in our high schools, in our youth areas. It's happening on our campuses. It's happening in the extended period of the 20-somethings. And it's happening in singles, again, that get out of a bad relationship and next thing you know, they struggle. The last couple slides that I'll just show you, if you move to the next slide, is that the fourth concept is we've got to teach an understanding of what predicts higher rates of marital quality and longevity. In other words, what do you need to know? If you go to the next slide, the first thing that we need to be teaching is to slow down in the early stages of a relationship. Don't be so accelerated. Be slower. Give it what I call the 90-day probation period. So you give it a little bit of time. Time reveals patterns. The immediate things that you see are not necessarily what's going to be lasting. But if you give it a bit of time, the patterns start to be revealed. And if you go to the next slide, the last areas I would just add would be you can look at how the person treats you, obviously. But I would say don't just get stuck there. Look at relationship scripts. How do they act in other relationships? I have a whole section in my course on the different relationships to look at, how to get to know people's family roles, what they have taken from their family, what they have are most likely to repeat in the family that they establish. And we've got to teach the difference between chemistry and true character, and not to confuse a person's character and conscience with their chemistry. If we go to the next slide. The head and the heart, as we said, are really meant to work together. If we help singles to know, to get to know the right areas while keeping a good pace over their relationship, hanging it into what I call the safe zone, we will really empower them to keep their head and hearts working together. If you go to the final slide, I would just say these four concepts that we've mentioned really become the core of what my course is all about and what I think any course or any program should be teaching. Number one, we got to teach people to look in the mirror, you know, to know that, hey, first and foremost, I've got to get my act together. Number two, don't think just because you have your act together, you're automatically going to get into a relationship with the right person. You've got to be wise about how you choose a partner. You've got to know what criteria to look at. You've got to, in many ways, make an assessment, even more importantly than the professions that make assessments and diagnose people and so forth. You've got to make an assessment of a person that's going to be not only good for you, but a person that's going to treat you well and help you grow in life. Number three, you've got to know how to run your relationship, teach relationship development. And number four, as we just said, we've got to teach people how to be doing this in many ways on their own, because individualism has just risen very, very high, more higher than it's ever been in history. And so we have to empower individuals to run their relationships, choose partners, and do things without all of the guidance even of society in general and families. Those things have kind of dropped off. And if we empower singles and help them to look at their templates, change their templates pre-relational, we will do some of the greatest preventative work for marriage success.
Thank you, Dr. Van Epp. A number of questions come in for you. We've got a number of questions. What we're going to do at the very end of Charles' presentation is pose those questions to both of you guys. But again, I just want to say thank you for the presentation and looking forward to asking a number of questions to you.
Thank you.
Our next presenter is Mr. Charles Jackson. Charles is the Public Relations Coordinator for the Alabama Community Healthy Marriage Initiative at Auburn University. He will discuss how best to market marriage and relationship education classes to post-high school-aged singles. At the Alabama Healthy Marriage Initiative, Mr. Jackson is responsible for coordinating national and statewide events, managing social marketing campaigns, coalition building, and community awareness. He is also involved in the design of billboards, public service announcements, and various websites and print media. In addition, Mr. Jackson is the program coordinator for the Teen Advisory Board, educating teenagers and young adults about the importance of healthy teen dating and peer relationships. Previously, he was a program coordinator for the Greater Montgomery Chapter of 100 Black Men of America, an international organization of professional men dedicated to empowering their communities through mentoring, education, economic development, and health and wellness. With this organization, he currently serves on their board of directors. With that, we'll turn it over to Charles. The time is yours.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. First, I'll begin by saying that today's presentation, Engaging Teens and Young Adults in Your Community Healthy Marriage Initiative, we'll start at looking at the research that we're already familiar with and how that can be transferred over into creating your marketing initiative for your campaign. One of the things I want to do in the very beginning here is, if you would, with me, there was some video that I wanted to include in the presentation that we weren't able to get in the presentation. So if I could get those of you that are on the call to actually open up a web browser and actually go to the website that you actually see, I've uploaded the video to the website that we'll make references to throughout the presentation. It's realteenrelationships.org. You'll see it on the first slide there, and you can click on the Real Teens Media, in which you will see a link to the video that I'll make references to in the presentation. Moving
forward, can you say the website one more time?
It's realteenrelationships.org. Realteenrelationships.org. And on the homepage, you will see at the top where it says Real Teen Media. If you click there, you'll see where it says click here for a special video for today's presentation. All right. And now going back to our PowerPoint here, why do we feel that it's important for us to engage teens? One of the things that we realize that, you know, teenagers, they have perceptions, different perceptions about love and marriage that, you know, transcends from childhood into their teen years. And we feel that, you know, with those perceptions or whatever, there are certain things that we would like to address. First of all, one of the comments that you see here was from Craig, age 9. It says, I don't want to get married even though I'm already 9. You're never alone and your wife always around you at all times. Also, you hear from Alan, who says, you've got to find somebody that likes the same stuff. Like if you like sports, she should like sports also and keep the chips and dips coming. Alan is going to have a tough time in his teenage years and adult years. We see that already. Moving to our next slide here, we actually see where, there we are. Moving to our next slide, you see where now we're looking at some of the thoughts that some of our teenagers actually have. Mrs. Nadine Bizimana at the age of 17 says, relationship is a job. The ultimate promotion is marriage. What if you go your entire youth years without any positive relationship smarts and get married without a prior relationship? That would be like running a company without education or prior experience. Total disaster. But most importantly, if you look further down, you see where one of the young men says, love is certainly not inevitable. There are many who die alone, never finding that special someone. I also realize that marriage is not what it used to be. With divorce rates as high as the Rocky Mountains, people obviously don't believe in growing old together anymore. With sentiments like this and perceptions like this, we find that it's very, very important that we do understand the perceptions that we are actually working with and kind of meet our target audience where they are in developing our marketing initiatives. I'm moving on to the next slide. Okay. All right, here we are. Moving on to the next slide. We actually, you see where most of the perceptions that a lot of our kids are actually getting, you know, are coming from home, things that they witness in their home environments and everything, which in many cases are not always the healthiest. We know that couple functioning has, a direct impact on, parent well-being, parenting practices, co-parenting quality, and father involvement, which all of those have a direct implication on, the adolescent outcomes and teen outcomes, which transcend into their dating environments, which transcend into, the teens that we're actually working with and also young adulthood. Going to the next slide. Why do we feel like it's important to work with these teens? For one, as participants, to start the pipeline of the high divorce rates and things of that nature. But today, what we really want to focus on more than anything is how we feel it's important to actually engage your teens as practitioners, as a group of individuals that can actually help you in developing your marketing campaigns and things of that nature. What we've done here at Found Success is engaging a group of teenagers to actually help us market our initiative, conceptualize ideas for our initiative, and then ideas that we create for ourselves to be able to advise us as far as if they feel that that would transcend well into, their teen audience and their peers and everything. We realized very quickly while sitting around the table trying to create a marketing campaign for teens that we were very distanced from, what is engaging to them and what is impactful for them. One of the things that we're doing now is actually using them as facilitators. We've trained members of our teen advisory board to be able to be peer facilitators, and this is very important with our marketing campaign, in which we're going to talk about on the next slide here. We realize with peer-to-peer learning, we recognize that peers are more open to actually receiving information from, their fellow peers than from an outsider, someone that's not a part of their group. So what we've realized also is that, however this is true, also peer-to-peer learning has, key benefits for, the peer leaders as well, boosting their self-esteem and also self-efficacy. One of the things that we quickly wanted to do in setting up our marketing initiative was to tailor a message that wasn't our voice going to the teens, but was the voice of teens speaking directly to teens, because we realized that it would be more engaging and more impactful to what we wanted to do. One of the things that we realize is with emotions, it enhances our ability to, form memories that are valid about certain events and things of that nature. We realize that this is even especially true with adolescents and teens also, because you know, they're not, their brains are still under development. Their frontal cortex, their thinking brain, is still under development up until the age of approximately 25. So it's even more important to, with your marketing initiative and your programs, to be able to engage teens and connect with their emotions of these young people, to be able to create an experience in your marketing campaigns, using such elements like music, video, and other visually stimulating graphics and things of that nature that will actually create a memory through the emotions and making that direct connection with our young population. Translated into marketing, what does that mean? For teens, we find that it may be a number of you all that were actually at the roundtable discussion in Chicago, where a gentleman from the True Advertising Agency actually mentioned that our teen population is very emotional when it comes to family connections and things of that nature. One thing that we realize is with teens, that with that deep emotional connection that they have, we have to learn how to start pulling on their heartstrings a little bit. You know, teens are deeply impacted by ads that, you know, draw them into a story that actually makes them feel good about themselves and feel good about the situation. One thing we can also focus on with our ads is actually creating an advertising campaign to actually show that our programs will bring them and their friends closer together as well. If you will, at this time, go to your web browser, those of you all that are on the internet with me right now. And under the media page, there is a great example of a McDonald's ad that actually did a great job of actually showing how to actually connect with the teen population by, you know, engaging them with music that they're familiar with, and also showing that they can indeed have fun with their family as well also. So if you click that, if you want, you can actually see that play in your browser there for a second. And while you're watching that, I'll go ahead and move on to that slide here.
Turn it out. What happened this time? Right foot, two steps. Left foot, two steps. Slide to the right. Slide to the left. Crisscross. Keep on with it. Come on. Stop, 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 y'all. Everybody.
One of the things that you see actually in this advertisement campaign right now that you're seeing that McDonald's did, they actually show, you know, the family actually enjoying themselves, having a good time actually in the restaurant together, using music and everything to really engage their audience. This is an advertisement campaign that actually went over very well with a teenage population and also the age group that we're talking about, post-high school teenage group also. And that information, as you see on the presentation, was found from Media Awareness Network, which I have a link to a presentation that actually shows a lot of research that actually has been done by this organization in the areas of teen marketing. One thing you want to do is, that I mentioned earlier, is create a marketing or program ambassadors. You know, it's essential to creating a campaign that, you know, will speak directly to your teen and target audience. Also, something that we realize is very important is to, you know, go with the bandwagon approach. For the sake of time, I'm not really going to have you go to the next video, but I'll speak about it very briefly. Everyone is familiar with the T-Mobile Fave 5 commercials and advertising campaign with Charles Barkley and Dwayne Wade and the other basketball stars that are involved with that. One thing that teens like to feel as if they're part of an in-crowd. They like to feel connected. You know, you have to create a message for your teens to convince them that if they're not involved in your programs, if they're not involved in your classes and things of that nature, that they're being left out. They have to feel like there's some value to coming and that if they're not there, they really miss something. So it has to be exciting and engaging. With the T-Mobile Fave 5 commercial, Charles Barkley was continually trying to get Dwayne Wade to actually give him, you know, put him in his Fave Five, which is his calling circle and everything. And then at the end of the commercial, it basically says, who do you have in your Fave Five? Do you have Fave Five? Leaving them feeling very left out, if those who didn't have a Fave Five. Also, one thing that we tend to do is not really think that kids can really absorb or teens can really absorb and digest numbers and facts. Sometimes we may water down our message a little bit too often, thinking that they can't digest it. I feel like we shouldn't overburden them with the numbers and the facts, but we should definitely give them something to think about in a way in which it's still engaging, in a way in which it actually promotes critical thinking, more like shock therapy, I would say. And it also enhances your credibility when you actually have numbers and facts. Also, one thing you want to do is repetition, as always. Some of the things that we've been able to do with our Teen Advisory Board and created this group to market and promote for us is they've been able to go out to different conferences and assemblies and communities events and also present and do panel discussions. One thing that we do with them is when they first come on board each year, they actually go through relationship education themselves so that we can get them to buy into our vision and our mission and everything. And then once they do, we actually put them on the forefront as ambassadors to actually go out and help promote our events, our initiative, and things of that nature. They've had an opportunity to present at various conferences. Most recently, they attended the African American Healthy Marriage Initiative Conference at UNC Chapel Hill, did a panel discussion there, and also performed a play that they also developed themselves as well. They've been very involved in actually developing our website. We have video PSAs, which you also see on our website if you have time later to go back and look at it, that the scripts and everything was specifically written all by them and also performed by them, which, you know, creates a great feel for other teens and everything. We also do they also help with various billboards, T-shirts, radio ads, and things of that nature. On this slide here, you just see a couple pictures from one of the performances that they recently did. The name of the stage production that they created is called You've Got to Hear It, It's Good and Juicy. Next, we'll get into more specifically, where should you be advertising? Basically, the Internet. Teens are definitely connected to the Internet. As you see in the presentation, it says teens are heavy consumers of technology. Over 90% of them are using the Internet. That's a statistic that actually just came out from the State of Our Nation's Youth Survey in 2009 here. We definitely have a wireless generation as well. More than four out of five teens carry wireless devices, and text messaging is actually on the rise also, which I'll discuss that a little more in depth in a few seconds here as well. Television. Television is still somewhat of a viable place for ad placement. I would say especially in areas that lack broadband, but one thing that we want to keep in consideration that a lot of teens now can actually sit in front of their computers and watch a whole television show. One thing when you're actually looking at doing television placement ads, you have to think about the impact that TiVo and DVR has actually had in reducing the opportunities for advertising there, because some of your digital recorders would not even record the commercials, and then others will also allow you to just fast forward through the advertisements. That's something you want to keep in mind. Also with radio, we have done some radio ads and PSAs, but we're learning also from our Teen Advisory Board that, we should focus on more podcasts, doing more podcasting and things of that nature, because kids are really not as in tune to sitting down, tuning into a radio station these days. They're more listening to CDs, digital music, and podcasts and things of that nature. And also with your traditional print ads and everything, place your print ads in places, your billboards and things of that nature, places where kids are and teens are going to frequent, rec centers, community centers, on campus, at local colleges and universities and everything, at the student union and things of that nature, and partner with the university in your area, see if you can offer a community-based class at the university and market it directly to your student population there. One of the things that we want to talk about pretty much for the rest of the presentation is social networking. It's the big thing that everyone is actually doing now. As you see, about 75% of teens are actively maintaining a social networking profile. That is defined as teams that are actually on the website every day, checking to see what their peers are doing, actually seeing what's going on and being connected to the outside world. One thing that we realize with our teams is talking is down. Even checking their emails is less frequent as it has been, because now they're really communicating heavily via text messaging on their cell phones, and as you see, about 58% text message frequently, and that number is also increasing. This actual slide presentation here, recently these figures actually came from a recent study. It's actually a marketing strategy campaign that actually MTV has done, and they call this campaign Generation P Report, which stands for Generation Producers. In their own rights, one thing that we realize with teens is they're producers and reporters in their own rights. With certain cell phones and technology now, they're going around taking video, taking images, and posting and sharing almost immediately. This is a talent among this population of and target audience that we can indeed benefit from by engaging them and having them actually go out and do pretty much the same thing for our initiatives. On the next slide, what's very interesting to me is you'll see a lot of the social networking sites here listed throughout the this particular slide. But what's interesting is to the left of the slide, you see where it says social, and to the right it says media. You'll see which is your social network, just more your social sites or whatever, is online community where people can socialize and network and things of that nature. But farther to your right, you see your sites that were really created for the purpose of posting media, pictures, and video, and actually just sharing. One thing that I would like to highlight about this particular slide is the placement of where YouTube is on this this slide. YouTube is a very valuable asset when it comes to actually promoting your initiatives and things of that nature, because it falls right in the middle of social and media. YouTube has truly evolved from your media placement site to allowing you now to fully engage an audience by posting your video. Not only just posting your video, but having an online community where you can actually dialogue and discuss different videos that you've posted. One of the things I will highlight going to the next slide about that as well is that one thing that YouTube allows you to do, if you create PSAs and announcements and things of that nature, when you place it on YouTube, YouTube will allow you to actually send out an automatic feed to Facebook and Twitter and other social networking sites, say, hey, this is a new video that we just posted. Check it out. Go to YouTube and actually view it. If you will, I will show this one particular video going back to our media page here on the website there. You will have to, going back to the media page where it says hide video, you have to hide the previous video that we showed. And number 5 on the list, I believe, it says That's Not Cool. That's Not Cool is an agency that actually has began creating this this campaign talking about digital dating abuse, sexting, text messaging, and things of that nature, and how digital dating, digital abuse is actually on the rise and things of that nature. If you click on a video, it will begin to play, and I'll talk about it briefly. But and you have to click show video again, I'm sorry. But the video began to play. And basically what they have done with these such videos is be able to engage teens in a way in which will be appealing to them. But then if you were actually looking at this video on YouTube as it's actually posted, it has a discussion forum where teens are actually involved in the conversation about the topic that this video is actually addressing. One thing that I like about the way that this particular organization has set up their video is they allow you to kind of choose your own path. It's not interactive here on our website because it's downloaded, but if you actually go to YouTube to actually see this video, you can kind of choose what direction you want the video to go in by selecting A, B, or C, and actually show the next video. And like I said, it's pretty much sets up more of a drama and a more of a learning experience and engaging experience, as we were saying earlier about connecting with the emotions and everything of this particular population as far as being able to engage and create memorable experiences in your marketing campaign. Going back to our slide presentation now, I want to talk briefly about how we actually have used Facebook also. Facebook is very integrated now where you can actually set up discussion forums there as well. Not only can you set up discussion forums, but also you can use Facebook for setting up community events and sending out information about your community events. One thing that we've done also is we've integrated our Facebook, YouTube, and also Twitter that I haven't mentioned yet, and we use those sites to actually drive teams back to our website where we have more useful information but more resources and information altogether on our website that we do not have in these places, so that whenever we have a new blog posting or we have a new video or PSA that we're featuring on our website, we can always send that information through these feeds and actually get people to our website. I was recently asked the question of how can we tell the impact that, you know, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter has. That's through our website traffic has been a way in which we've been able to somewhat monitor that. You can, based off of our PSAs and video traffic and or video releases and things that we're doing, we can send out a message on Twitter that says, you know, new video here, go visit our website. And then if you're actually monitoring the traffic on your website, you actually see the impact that and the increases of hits and visits to your website and everything through just sending out your messages on Twitter, YouTube, or Facebook. One thing I would like to say also about those, talking about testing, it came in a conversation we were having yesterday with our project manager. She was saying that, you know, she just got to her realization that her teen daughters no longer check, you know, voicemail. And that's something that even myself, I have to say I'm guilty of, because I feel that once I see the missed call, I'll call back, but that the person will also send me a text message. And I feel like a lot of our kids are doing the same thing now. A lot of the kids I call and a lot of the teens that I call coordinating events and meetings and stuff, I get their voicemail and says, sorry, your voicemail is full. That's something constantly that I'm dealing with. And I could call and call and call and never get an answer, but as soon as I text, I get a reply. Our kids are really in tune to texting right now. One thing that I will say about using Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube is they can all be integrated through your phone, where some phones may not be able to get to see the full content of your website, but if you send out micro blogs or micro snippets of information through Twitter or through YouTube or through Facebook, they can go automatically to their phones, and which can actually drive them to your website, because they may not be sitting in front of computers all day as we may assume that they are, but once they get that information to their website, it does encourage them to actually go and to your website to see the new information or content that you actually uploaded to your website, or to find out more about your events and activities and things of that nature. Going to the next slide here. Okay. Well, actually, I can't get to the next slide. Well, here we are. All right. Just going to the next slide, I just wanted to give some of the credit as far as a lot of the information came from. I first wanted to thank Dr. Francesca Adler-Bader, not only because she's the boss, but because she was very helpful in pulling together a lot of the research on the front end of the presentation about, when it came to peer-to-peer education and experiential learning and things of that nature. Also, a lot of the information in this slide you'll see came directly from YouTube, their audience reach report, the annual audience reach report. Also, MTV, as I mentioned to you earlier, their Generation P report. Another website that I feel that'll be useful for you, visit whatteenswant.com. This website, this organization hosts an annual conference where you have different people who are marketing to teens actually come and present. Their conference was in June of this year, They have all of their presentations from this year's conference where you can download and get more information as well, and also pull some information from That's Not Real also. On my final slide here, I just included contact information if you have any further questions for us. My contact information is there. And like I said, I know we have question and answers coming up at this time, but if you have anything else that you want to get with us on a later basis, you're free to do so. And now it's over to Patrick.
Thank you, Charles. Wonderful presentation, great detail. There are a number of questions that I have for both you and Dr. Van Epp. Before we do that, we got a couple of questions came in for the videos that you referred to, so I did write down how I got to them. The website for folks is www.realteenrelationships.com.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the top of the website, once you go on the home page, the top right, you'll see one of the live links for Real Teen Media. At the very bottom of that page, there's a live link that says click here for special videos, which is where he's actually created a number of videos for today's webinar, which we really appreciate. And there you'll be able to find the McDonald's video that Charles referred to earlier, the Fave 5 video, and also the That's Not Cool video. The website, realteenrelationships.com. Click on that live link. There are four of them at the top. You'll see the one that says Real Teen Media. Click that. Once you get to that page at the bottom, you'll see a click here for special videos. And then you'll see at the very bottom, it looks like an iPod, where you'll see a number of the different videos that have been uploaded for today's webinar, but specifically he referred to the McDonald's video, the Fave 5 video, and That's Not Cool video. So, Charles, again, we appreciate you doing that for today's webinar. Well, I'm going to go through the questions. Dr. Van Epp and Charles are ready. I'm going to go through the questions as many as I can. We got a number in front of me, so I'm going to just try to process those. A couple of the questions, Dr. Van Epp and Charles, I'll ask both of you to respond to, and then there are ones that are specifically for each of you I ask you to respond to individually. Start with Dr. Van Epp. How early should programs or parents begin introducing children to healthy relationship skills? And the question, the second part of that is how? How early should programs and parents begin introducing children to healthy relationship skills, and how?
Well, I'll start with parents. I think parents from day one are doing that. I know when both my daughters were growing up, just as a parent myself, I was riding around with my daughter when she was 4 years old, and we were talking about healthy relationships, and I can remember doing that from that age all the way through, from relationships that they were in, from observing other people. And I think that goes to something that is implied by that question, which would be, are we educating parents to know what to talk to their kids about? I know in our, not to keep bringing up my program, but in my program we developed a parent guide, about a 28-page parent guide and a seminar for parents to know how to talk to their kids, because a lot of that education never was done for parents. So parents are just kind of feeling their way and not really knowing what they can do. In terms of programs, I think we need to bridge healthy friendships and what they look like, and choosing a friend that has a good qualities of trustworthiness and understanding what, you know, a healthy friend and a healthy friendship looks like. We need to bridge that concept in kids' minds at an early age with healthy romantic relationships, that ultimately in the long run, all of the qualities of a good friendship are embedded in a healthy romantic relationship. And then you have romance and other aspects as well, but helping them to see that they're not qualitatively different, but that there is a tremendous amount of overlap, really puts our young people at early ages in a much better position. So we can be teaching healthy friendships, choosing healthy partners, you know, all through elementary school. I know that we have taught, you know, my course in at least the teen version in the middle school era from 6th to 8th grade, so that you begin to work at the expectations of what relationships are going to be and what to look at. And as I mentioned earlier, affecting those templates. So I think that too soon is not really the concept that we should be going with here. We should be looking at how do we do it at the earliest of ages.
Thank you. Thank you. Question for Charles. I know that Auburn University works with college students. You described several different ways that you guys outreach to the teens in your program. The question is, do those same marketing and outreach strategies, Facebook, Twitter, the YouTube, all those social networking sites, do they work with college-age students as well? And I would translate that question to also mean folks of that age that are not in college, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Do they work with that group as well?
I would have to say it does. With the number of our teen advisory board students that we actually started out with, the group actually started as a high school students. We actually chose high school students from two of the local high schools. Since then, we've had a number of them actually graduate and have actually started college in the local area and other places. So we bounce a lot of our information still off of them. I personally feel that the use of Facebook, Twitter, and really Facebook in general, and also even MySpace still, even though it's on the decline now, it's still relevant because you have a lot of people really going to these social networking sites to stay in touch with friends from high school, things of that nature. One of the things I realize right now, I'm getting ready to approach my 10-year high school reunion. A lot of my friends that and peers that actually didn't go to college and things of that nature are on Facebook trying to stay engaged and connected to people who have moved on and things of that nature. Only thing I would say is maybe the access to computers and things of that nature may not be as available, but they are actually finding time to actually get onto those sites.
So it is a great way to connect with that age group as well, which is
correct.
Okay. A question for Dr. Van Epp. How much of an influence, you had a couple of media-type slides in your presentation, how much of an influence would you say the media has played in the way that individuals date nowadays, and how is the question?
Well, that question almost has been answered by Charles through his entire presentation, because if we're talking media or if we're talking the electronic world, the internet world, it is really the world, you know, it's an abstract, invisible world, but it becomes, you might say, the social arena more and more for the generation of teens and those in their 20s right now. I would say my oldest daughter's 27. She's very, very adept at this whole world that we're talking about. So, you know, that's almost the entire 20s all the way down to younger ages that's the world they live in. So reality shows, you know, a good 5 years ago started really becoming more and more in the forefront to the point where they in many ways they dominate. And part of that was imitating what's going on in just all of the social networking, and it's just one reality show after another when you go through Facebook or MySpace or any of these other places. So I think that change in the whole experience, the whole social networking of our youth, and it's going to ultimately be just our society probably at large as time goes on, but that change, that trend, has heightened the influence that media places. So when you see media, there becomes a fine line between reality and fantasy in many ways. That's why reality shows, you know, can have a lot of fantasy in them, but we want the media to be more and more reality. And as a result, I think it's become even more influential than when we'd watch it. We would just think that was just something made in Hollywood. And so, I think that there's a lot of doing whatever you see. You know, it's the role modeling is happening more and more in cyberspace than it is necessarily in the home.
Okay, thank you. Question for Charles. How much, with you working with teens and also college-age students, how do you and how much do you engage the friends and family of some of the youth and singles that you're dealing with?
One of the things that we're actually doing now with our teen advisory board is creating opportunities for friends and family to become involved, where once a month now we're actually hosting what we call Relationship Smarts Weekend, where family and friends will actually be invited in for a weekend or a weekend of activities and also a mini lesson in relationship education, really to give them a glimpse of what we're doing and also try to target them get them interested in actually taking a full class and things of that nature. I feel that it's very important to actually, as much as you can, to engage, you know, the entire family, also their entire environment, also with their peers and their friends also, to be able to, you know, impact not only them but also change the environment instead of working with them and sending them back into adverse situations. Like I said, that's pretty much what we're doing, trying to just on our Relationship Smarts Weekend to actually impact their environment that way. They can bring their family, their friends, and things of that nature to that weekend activity or whatever to find out more about relationship education, what we're doing, things of that nature. Also, we do community events. Right now, we're planning some things centered around, you know, football season. Football is a big thing here, really in the South, really in Alabama. What we're planning right now is, you know, during game days, we want to have a presence out while everyone is tailgating and there's some family activities and things that going on certain parts of the campus and everything, having a presence where we're creating, we're starting this whole thing that we call kind of like live statues where we actually have them actually posing on the concourse and actually with statistics and things out there, kind of like a shock kind of therapy kind of thing that actually engage them, you know, people visually that's walking by seeing, you know, somewhat like street performance sitting there. And that's an environment where, you know, families are there and things of that nature.
Thank you, sir. Got a few more minutes, so I'll try to get a few more of these questions posed to both of you guys. Question again for you, Charles, second question. You shared that evoking emotion creates memories that are much more meaningful for you. Can you share an example of what kinds of emotions? You shared that evoking emotions creates memories that are much more meaningful for you. Can you share an example of what kind of emotions you're referring to?
Yes. Well, just with pretty much anyone, you know, a lot of times the things that you remember most are things that were very exciting moments in your life or even traumatic experiences in your life. Basically, one thing that we realize is that, you know, kids and these teens actually have, whether their both parents are involved in their lives or not, they really have a strong sense of a family or a strong desire of wanting to know, you know, their parent or their father if their father is not involved and things of that nature. So they have they're strongly connected with their family. It's kind of like that thing where you hear people say that, you know, I could talk about my family, but you can't say anything about them. Well, with our teens, you know, one thing that even the McDonald's commercial did, it actually kind of pulled in the whole nature of family. I feel like at the age that a lot of these teens and young adults are at, they're still somewhat positive about getting married and being in positive relationships. They may have already had some negative experiences and may have some perceptions, but they're still at an impressionable age. And at this point, they have that desire to want something that's positive and everything, and you can play off of that. You can actually pull on those heartstrings, as I was mentioning earlier, showing having ads and everything of that nature that actually show that, you know, that you can do it. I feel like one of the things that I hear a lot from our teen advisory board, and not just them, but some of the ones that have moved on to college, is that, you know, with the advertising campaigns that are out here, they get a lot of the negative. They promote a lot of the negative. These are the negative statistics. These are the things that are doing bad. But they're looking for hope. They're looking for messages of hope that, you know what, there's a lot of bad, but there's opportunity for good also. So they're looking for that desire of or looking for that opportunity, or someone showing them that it is an opportunity, and can pull on those heartstrings and say that, you know, you can do it, you can do well. That's one thing that we realize.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Question for Dr. Van Epp. Over the 20 years that you've been working with individuals in this field, what would you say is different about the way that individuals enter relationships now than in past generations? Over the 20-plus years that you've been working with individuals in this field, what would you say is the difference about the way individuals enter relationships now than in the past generation?
Well, I think if I look maybe a little farther than just the 20 years, I would say that if we look at the last three generations, you know, going from my father's generation to my generation to those that are now growing up and have kids, this third generation, that, you know, there's been some major shifts. And at the very end of my slideshow, I talked about individualism is reigns. It's that individualism was on the rise, and social guidance systems, meaning that society had certain norms that you had to follow. There were norms of what you did when you dated, and this would have been different for different cultures and ethnicities, but almost all cultures and almost all ethnic and cultural pockets in not just Western society, in America, throughout Europe, but even in other areas of the world, there were these guided systems that were tracks of society that not everybody had to follow exactly the same track, but there were general kind of global tracks. There was also an understanding of what relationships looked like and what roles were fulfilled in the relationship. If you know, were growing up in the 40s and you're Italian, you were expected to date another Italian and to fulfill the role of an Italian, you know, woman or Italian man. Whatever your ethnicity and background was, societies were more segmented. Tracks leading from adolescence all the way into adulthood, into marriage, were much more established socially, and families were much more involved. All of those things have shifted toward being more complex. The world has kind of shrunk with what, you know, Charles was talking about so much in terms of the world of the internet and cyber social relationships. And the influence of some social norms have tremendously lessened, so that there are, you know, not these clear tracks anymore. It's kind of like anything goes. So there's the sense of openness to being influenced and directed and led is much, much higher. And the sense of I know what I'm doing and I know where I'm going and is much lower. So this has led to lots of talk and a tremendous amount of input about love and relationships in the world of singles, but very little clarity and understanding and confidence. So almost like the more we know, the more confusing it's become in the world that we're in. So I think a lot of what we're trying to do today is to give fairly universal truths in practical language that empower singles to feel like they know better what they're doing, what healthy looks like, what relationships should look like in a premarital world, and what marriage can look like and how to make it successful. But that has been a tremendous challenge with these changes and these social shifts that have occurred, particularly in Western society, and I think its influence in other societies as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that concludes our Q&A portion of today. What I want to do now is extend a heartfelt, warm thank you to both Dr. Van Epp and Mr. Charles Jackson for taking the time to present today on our topic related to individuals and how they can be approached by programs working with them. Both very informative presentations. The presentations both will be on the Resource Center's website shortly thereafter. The website is www.healthymarriageinfo.org. We'll post the presentations as well as a frequently asked questions document along with a recording of today's webinar as well. At this time, what I'd like to do is present poll questions to get your feedback on today's webinar. You can email me directly to say how today's webinar went. My email address is patrick.patterson@publicstrategies.com, patrick.patterson@publicstrategies.com, or we'd like you to complete the survey questions that we're going to post on the slides for the next few minutes or so. The first question, I better understand the perspective of emerging adults toward long-term relationships and love. I better understand the perspective of emerging adults toward long-term relationships and love. There are five options there. There are six options there, actually, for you to vote. Next question. I have a better idea of how to tailor relationship education program content to meet the needs of emerging adults. Same set of options. Next question. I better understand which media vehicles best target the emerging adult population. Same set of options. Next question. I am better equipped to market messages about relationship education to appeal to emerging adults. And our final question. I found today's webinar to be informative and useful. A couple of quick reminders and a couple of points I want to make before we close. The first is, many of you, if you are working with couples, probably have seen the last month or so CNN featuring the Black in America series. We are all very proud that one of the segments was on marriage education, and one of the providers that many of us know, Nisa Muhammad out of Washington, D.C., with the Wedded Bliss Foundation. She's done Black Marriage Day, but also conducts programs in the D.C. area. She was featured. There's been wonderful, wonderful feedback and response to the way she was featured. The program was featured during the series. And so I just want to say thank you to her for her effort. As a follow-up to that, she was actually recently featured this past Wednesday night on a live chat on twoofus.org, twoofus.org, a website designed for the same population that we focused on today on today's webinar, individuals, those that are single, engaged, dating, but also married couples as well. Coming up, and this was widely attended, I would say there were more than 200 folks that tuned in to this past Wednesday's live chat with Nisa. Next month, we have another featured speaker that many of you know, Dr. Rosario Slack. He will be the featured live chat speaker on twoofus.org on August the 26th at 8 p.m. So if you have not been to twoofus.org yet, I would encourage you to do that now, to make sure you log on, become a member of the community, but also pay special attention to the date, August 26th at 8 p.m., where we'll have Dr. Slack as a live chat person as well. With that, again, I want to say thank you to Dr. John Van Epp and Mr. Charles Jackson, and I wish you all a wonderful evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.